Where were you and how did you hear about Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941?
Oh, I was at Siloam Springs, Arkansas, fixing to come home. We usually would leave on Sunday afternoon about 2 or 3 o'clock because it took 3 to 4 hours to drive over here in those days. So we were just fixing to come home when they got the word, the barber there in Siloam Springs. My grandfather was a customer of his and his son had been killed. And that was the big news around Siloam Springs that day.
But he was in Pearl Harbor when the Japanese...
This young man was killed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did that impact your family in any way?
My cousins, practically all of them on both sides of the family, and my brother all went to the service. My brother was in the Air Corps. 2 or 3 of them were in the Air Corps. The others were just soldiers.
You would have been 25 or 26 in 1941.
Yeah.
There was rationing, do you remember?
Oh, yeah, I remember the ration. My aunt was a nurse, and she was able to get coupons for gasoline.
Rationing stamps, I guess
rationing
we call them.
Rationing stamps for gasoline and for tires because of her work. So that didn't keep me from driving to and from Siloam Springs practically every week.
Do you remember the first car that you bought?
Yeah, I surely do. One of my cousins, Bruce McAllister, was just born to be a mechanic. All of his life, he mechanicked on cars. Even when he was going to high school, he worked at a garage across the street there. So he got from them a Model A Ford sedan. Well, he souped that booger up until it was quite a car. So when he got ready to go to the Army, he sold me that car for $100. And that was the first car I ever had to drive. My dad was not good about letting me drive the family car. I don't know whether it was because money being kind of short, he maybe didn't have insurance or what it was. But anyway, he always took me wherever I had to go. But I got Bruce's car. Boy, I really put it through the works during the war. I drove that thing. That was another thing, you know, the bridge on the Grand River washed out, and you had to go on a ferry to get across. It didn't bother me to drive alone at night. So I would sometimes get to that ferry after dark. I was waiting there in line one night, and a man came up to the car, gave me a sad story about his car was broke down, and his family was sitting up there. And he needed to get to Tulsa. Could I give him a ride? Well, I wasn't very smart, so I told him to get in, and I drove him to his kin folks here in town. Well, when I told that the next week, my Uncle Dave, he said, "Don't you ever let anybody get into that car with you. Not ever." So I never did after that.
Would you have been wearing nylons then? That was difficult to find.
Oh, yeah, sure I did. But every now and then, there were ways of getting hosiery.
What do you mean, ways?
Oh, just trade-off. I don't remember any particular way. Never did go without them. We darned them up sometimes. We sewed up a runner. At least at our house, we did.
If there were runs in those nylons, you fixed them?
We sewed them up, needle and thread. Very often.
How about clothes that you wore? Women wore skirts in public. Is that true? And maybe did not wear pants in public?
I really don't know anything about that.
Because wearing pants or skirt was not an issue to you?
No, huh? I always had worn trousers in the country in riding horseback and doing that kind of thing.
Back then, 40s and 50s, when you went downtown, did people dress up?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You didn't go to town unless you the suit and your pocketbook and your gloves and your hat went with it.
It was
de rigueur that you completely outfitted. That was just the thing you did.
Yeah. It was your Sunday go-to-meeting clothes.
Well, any time you went downtown, that was important.
During World War II, did you hear anything about German concentration camps or things like that?
Not particularly. That kind of information just didn't get down to our level. I guess.
Did you play tennis at TU?
Oh, yes.
Did you play for the school?
No, I never did play on their tennis team, but I sure played a lot out there. I should say so.
You graduated from TU when?
36.
And a degree in?
Business administration.
Then what did you do?
Well, I loafed around for about a year, did little odd jobs. A lady friend whom I knew worked for the Oklahoma State Employment Service. Her name was Pauline Wood. She was a good Presbyterian. Every now and then, she'd get me a little part-time job. I'd work a month or maybe 2 months or something like that. But finally, one day, she called and said, "We're losing so many young men to the service. I'm the employment person at Stanlin Oil and Gas, and if you want a job down here, come on down. So I was down there the next day, and she got me a job. I kept track of machine tools, and we typed up what we called property record cards. The field would send in a sheet of paper listing so many thousand feet of 6-inch pipe or whatever. And then we'd take those sheets and type a property record card. Business machines were just commencing to get popular about that time. So then they'd take those and make a runoff of those and make vouchers. You were supposed to do 500 or 600 of those cards in a day. I did that for quite a while. Then I got promoted from $3.25 an hour to about $4 an hour after I'd done that for 6 months.
How long did you work there?
30 years.
So you moved up the ranks then?
Oh, pretty well. I got to be a senior clerk. That was about as good as they ever let a woman get. There was very much discrimination between the men and the women in pay. I trained many an old boy.
And he ended up making more money than you.
And he ended up making a lot more than I did. That's right.
Did you just accept that? That's the way it was?
Well, that's just the way it was, yes. But Stanlin changed hands two or three times. They were bought by bigger companies. And then they divided up. The company had really grown. It was really fast moving. They had a field office in Oklahoma City, another one in Denver, and another one up in Montana somewhere. So ever so often they would send a half a dozen people from this town, say to Oklahoma City, and two or three more over to Houston or wherever they had these other offices. But every time it got around to where it looked like I might be decentralized, I called on an old school friend named Jim Kendall. He was the assistant comptroller. We had gone to school together. So I tell my sad story about I had my dear mother to look after. I didn't want to go up there, blah, blah, blah. So I never did have to go.
30 years.
Finally, there at the last, they were going to completely close this office. So it was either go to Chicago, where they were going to send everybody, or take what we call the golden handshake, early retirement. I took the early retirement. I took the golden handshake. Then I went to work for a lady called Billy Dahlheit. She was a most unusual woman, business-wise. She had what was called Tulsa Tank Cleaning. She had a business all over the country. She had a field office in Detroit, one down in Louisiana, and the one here, and one somewhere else. But they cleaned those 50,000-barrel oil tanks, like over here at West Tulsa. They cleaned those oil tanks. Her partner in that business lived down the street from me, and we caught the bus on the same corner. She knew I was taking the golden handshake, so she said, "We need somebody over in West Tulsa at the office, if you'd want to come." So I went over there. And I did everything over there. I made the coffee and put the toilet paper in the rolls, and I did everything over there for about 8 years. And Mother's brother died, and she said, "It's time you retired for good." So I quit. But I enjoyed working for those old girls. They were nice to me.